organisations who adopt some form of force for good work, whether that be volunteer, charity, social good, any kind of contribution towards the CSRs, it is having a positive impact on well-being on the individual. There's not enough data to show the exact kind of return on an organisational level. However, it's safe to say that if it's positively impacting the well-being of the individuals within an organisation, they are healthier, they are happier, they're going to perform better, they're more productive, they're looking after themselves. You're going to get more of your employee when they are there as well.
You are listening to the Green Business with Impact podcast with your host, Jasper Steinhausen.
Welcome to the podcast. Today we are going to talk about one of the cornerstones of any thriving business, the well-being of the people in the organization. As we all know, people are the most important assets of all of it, and therefore, obviously, I had to dive into the relationship between sustainable business and how it affects the people inside of the organization. And for that, I'm really pleased that a good friend of mine and podcast host, Freddie Pullen, introduced me to you, Charlotte. So first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jasper. It's great to be speaking to you today. And I know we've just recently recorded an episode with you as well. So I know for sure this is going to be a fun episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But let me just make a brief introduction of you so the listeners have an idea about why I think it's such a great idea to have you here. Because Charlotte, which full name is Stepping Mills as a surname, is the co-founder of the company called The Wellness Theory. You are a multi-award-winning team specializing in stress relief and collaborative well-being solutions, and you are based in the UAE. You've been featured several times in media like the Arab Business, CEO Middle East, Gulf News, and you help high-performing individuals and organizations to overcome burnouts and anxiety and basically help navigating the complexity of the modern day business environment. So that's sort of the brief version of you. And I would like if you could just open up by telling us a bit about how important is, well, as you say, stress and well-being to a business success in today's world.
Oh, so it's such a great question to open up with, because the answer is it's important depending on which way we're looking at it. It will make your business or it will break your business. And I think it's really important to understand right off the bat, though, that there is a big difference between healthy and unhealthy stress, because the last thing we would want is for anybody to think that we want stress-free environments. We actually want to be able to leverage the good form of stress so that we can actually, create what we need to in a business sense, because it's good to have that hunger and that drive, but not at the expense of somebody's actual health.
That seems like a really important distinction to make. And especially when we are talking about these purpose-driven businesses, I imagine that there is a fine balance between that positive stress that drives and then, burnout. That's somewhere on that axis, it becomes unhealthy. So I'm curious to hear what your experiences are with that.
Absolutely. I mean, purpose-driven businesses are unique in the sense that there is this extra energy and passion to go that bit further, perhaps, than what I would say is just a regular organization or a regular business. But it doesn't help create the outcome if it becomes unhealthy stress. So particularly here in the UAE, last year there was a piece of research done showing that 98% of people were experiencing at least one symptom of burnout, which is naturally
98
healthy stress. 98%.
Only 98%.
Only 98%. I mean, 2% of people were not, which is insane if you think about it.
Yeah.
And it's quite scary because that has a massive knock-on effect, right? Or productivity on the decline, absenteeism, presenteeism also feeding into the absenteeisms, particularly for the purpose-centered organizations. Obviously, insurance claims on the rise, staff turnover, it has a massive impact. And I think we all know that stress is one of the major contributors to dis-ease and illness. And it's something that I think in the US, there was a Stanford study that was done that showed that work-related stressors are contributing to over 120,000 deaths a year in the US alone as well. So there's so many reasons why we need to start paying attention to well-being.
But why is it that we still, as people and as business leaders, tolerate it and don't sort of put our foot down and say, I got to step back, even though, you know, I'm extremely busy, and now it becomes counterproductive if I speed up rather than slow down? Why is it so hard for people and organizations to deal with this?
Yeah. Well, I think it comes from a long line of the way we've always done things, right? So, you know, that industrial revolution was we work, right? And we just keep going. Yes, we do knock off at a certain time, but now we don't knock off at a certain time, right? We continue working with the rising technology. And again, that purpose-led leader is more likely to go above and beyond with regards to their timing, their energy, their inputs, everything. And it's hard because there's something deep within our psyche that tells us that's what we have to do to get results. And it's because that's what we've known. And the reality is we don't actually have to do that. As we evolve as a society, we need to start evolving our own paradigms of which we see things in our life, even when it comes to things like finances, right? Well-being being one of them, sustainability being another one. We need to start upgrading perhaps the way that we think about things. So I think it's really hard because there's so much pressure of the way it's always been done to keep doing it that way. It was Einstein, right? Wasn't it, that said, you know, insanity, doing the same thing over and over again. Eventually, when we have to stop, we will stop.
Yeah, but that's way too late, probably. Exactly. Yeah. Well, I guess you have a lot of experience with dealing with companies where they are in a stressful situation, and especially getting them to a place where they are more in balance and thriving more. So could you just let us know a bit, what does it take to foster such an environment of low stress and well-being as a sustainable business?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, again, it becomes a bit of a tricky one because there's so many terms, right, as in what is like well-being, right? So we've already said that stress can be healthy or unhealthy. We've said, do we want particularly low stress? Maybe not. We want a healthy stress driving into that business. But we also need to understand the difference between like wellness and well-being. We need to start to create what we call like a well-working ecosystem. And to do that, we have to understand the distinction, right? We have to understand that we have our cultural well-being. So we have things like the benefits for employees. We have our communication, our leadership styles, we have health and safety, we have different policies. These are the things almost like brick and mortar. And I will clarify that as like kind of workplace well-being. And then we have employee wellness, right? Which is where we have stress regulation, emotion regulation, positive psychology, mental health support, things within the workplace to keep us healthy, encouraging us to move more. So there's all of these different elements to employee wellness. One of the things that's standing in the way is that we tend to get those two confused and we start trying to solve one problem with perhaps a solution that isn't the right solution.
Solution that fits in the other bucket, basically.
Exactly. So for it to become a sustainable business, right, and create an environment of healthier stress, right, or well-being instead of the stuff that isn't so productive, we need to start to look at, okay, what is the relationship between those two things? Because I believe workplace well-being and employee wellness sits in like this infinity loop where they both inform each other. And until we start to pay attention that they are two different areas, so we start to problem solve in the right way, we need to also understand it's a shared responsibility between both the employee and the employer. And I think that could be where we are perhaps not hitting the mark when it comes to the results that we want to be seeing.
Where do you start? Do you start with the culture part? Because that defines a lot of the other things, or more on the tactical parts about, as you say, how good are we at having breaks and getting up and moving and eating and stress relief and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, where do we start?
I love that you've even asked that question, because that question isn't being asked. What tends to be happening when we look at the landscape of organizations at the moment is almost I know this person that does this well-being thing or this kind of training or this kind of learning and development because it was talked about once at this event. We're just going for the things that we think are perhaps easier. We're not even asking the question, where do we need to start? So just asking that question is a brilliant start. One of the things that we do with organisations, though, is we run an assessment, right? So we run an assessment to understand the state of workplace well-being and the current state of employee wellness. And from there, that gives us a picture of where is our low-hanging fruit? Where's our biggest opportunities? What can we do that perhaps is reactive and responsive based on where you are right now? But also, what can we put in play to be more proactive? And the proactive things are more often than not the cultural pieces, like you just said. I know we've touched upon this in previous conversations, Jasper, about does something really create lasting change if it's an add-on, right? Or if it is it coming from the center of a mission, a vision, and organization? Like, we have to start to answer those kinds of questions.
Yeah. So let's just say I'm a business leader. And I'm in one of these purpose-driven businesses. I know clearly what I want. Let's just stick to an area that most people probably recognize themselves in. Let's just say it's climate change. That this is a challenge I take on. You know, I'm turning my business into being a forceful tool to help solve this. And I'm really passionate about it. So, and as you say, and I completely recognize that picture, that is an endless source of energy almost, and it might even be to a point where it puts more pressure on the people around them, you know, and that might always be good for them. And so if this is me, if this is my situation, and perhaps my team is starting to get a bit into red, what do I do? You know, if I were to call you, what happens? Where do we start? What are the good things to reflect upon if this is your situation?
So the very first situation, if you're noting your team already going into red, we need to immediately look at bringing your team back to a place of resource, right? So that would be interventions that help your employees get more sleep. What boundaries need to be set within the organization to actually set those boundaries? What support might be needed? Because there is an extra emotional drive in sustainability-driven businesses around climate change. You know, there's a lot of eco-anxiety out there as well, which may even be enhanced and amplified through the work someone's doing. So are there resources? Is there coaching available? Are there support services available for the team? So my, the first point of call would be to bring your team back into resource with support and flexibility for a set time period to bring people back on the track. At the same time, that doesn't mean work just stops. It just means that becomes a focus, right? And then from an organization standpoint, it is what changes need to be put in play in the long term, not just the short term, to bring our team out of the red and into the green.
If I work with a business leader and they are at this brink of being stressed out themselves, you know, perhaps showing up to a coaching session, I haven't really had any time to do what we talked about last time and what I committed to because, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's kind of like the company's running around with me, not the other way around. And then I always start to help them with clarify and focus a bit about what's the key things we're doing here, right? What's the results do you want out of it? Because we spend so much time on stuff that's not important, really, compared to where we want to go. So how big a proportion in the longer run is it to get that clarity on what's important and then, you know, make priorities and assign resources according to that? Where does that fit in this issue?
It needs to be. So if it's coming from the top, and you know, 9 times out of 10, it is, but somebody in that position likely wouldn't notice their team burning out and being in the red because they are so far down that rabbit hole themselves. So the fact that they're recognizing it is amazing. And that ideally is enough for them to just take the foot off the accelerator for a moment to be able to reestablish what's happening. There's different ways in which you can do that, right? There is coaching, like we said, but it's more of an intervention that's likely needed and a pickup takeaway outside of the organization for a day, maybe 3 days, maybe even a week, which can sound extremely overwhelming and scary for a business leader to always like take their foot off the gas a little bit and to perhaps trust their team to do what they're doing. But it's recognizing this in investment, right? It's an investment in mental health, but also in the direction of the business, because otherwise you're going to keep like pushing uphill, feeling all this resistance. If you imagine it's like a rubber band, you're pulling yourself back in order to spring forward even more efficiently. That's what we're looking at doing. And that's what we would then do with a leader, depending on what it is they actually needed. this whole notion of they just need a holiday and things like this is not, it's not, not that's not going to solve burnout, right? And you just suddenly start meditating. Yes, you know, those things can help, but the reality is you need to dig deeper. You need to start understanding what is going on at the root core of the business, but also of the individual. Because sometimes business leaders have things going on inside of them that is triggering them in perhaps an unresourceful way day to day, right? So there could be things like emotional, unresolved emotion from past events playing in the mix. There could be certain beliefs they have about their team, about their business that need to be looked at. It could be a conflict of their own value system and the value system of the company. So there's all of those other things to explore on a personal level and then looking into what's going on at the business level.
One of the things that you point to there in the end is really interesting, because I've definitely seen that in reality several times, where we have this very progressive CEO that typically has taken over the reins and represents some sort of either generational shift directly or just a new kind of leader that comes in, and they want something else, right? They have this drive. They might be adding that level of purpose to it, but they are perhaps not completely in line with the organization or with the board. So even though the board has chose them, it's still that perhaps they hadn't really recognized the depth that the person have on this issue. It was more like, yes, sure, we're going to work with sustainability, but you know, do we have to work so much with it? Is it that sort of, you know, are we looking to change the way we do business? I don't feel comfortable with that. I could definitely see how that could be a key part of the issue.
Yeah, definitely. That can definitely be a key part of the issue. And we do see that, right? There typically needs to be a transition period when a new C-suite comes on board, whether it's CEO, COO, CFO, anybody. Ideally, there's a crossover period where this is being addressed. However, the reality is it's not always the case. So activities and sessions and trainings that reconnect teams to the vision, mission, values, but also the behaviors becomes very, very important. Again, there's different ways that you can do that. You don't have to throw out the vision and the mission and the values and start all over again. What we need to do is bring that team together, whether it's the senior team, whether it's the whole team, depending on the size of the company, bringing everybody together to refresh and reconnect so that their personal value makes sense, so that they can see how their behaviors actually influence the company's objective, but also their own personal objectives. And when those two things line up, that there becomes flow, right? And it becomes a lot easier because now they get it and something clicks and it makes sense why they're doing it.
I think that's really powerful, because very often also we will see that part of such a transformation starts by obviously someone in the leadership team, whether it's your owner, founder, CEO, or the whole leadership team. They sort of stick out that new course, and making sure that then you get everybody on the bus, not just, you know, they're just communicating, but like you said, it's actually a journey to make sure that everybody figure out, how does this work with me at a personal level and at professional level, whatever it is I do in this machine, where I fit in.
It's interesting as well, because there's a direct correlation between values mismatch being a cause of burnout and values mismatch being a reason why people leave organizations or don't join them in the first place. So if we really looked at that and we go into an organization, often employees are not consciously aware of their own personal values, that they haven't actually done that level of self-reflection to know that about themselves. So how on earth would they then consciously connect to the company's vision and values? It just doesn't make any sense. So if an organization or a forward-thinking leadership team can provide those kind of sessions for employees, it becomes eye-opening for everybody involved, and it just creates a beautiful team cohesion to then be able to drive the mission forwards effectively.
But how do you do that? I mean, I know how you could do it, and I've obviously been through them myself, but that's also fairly comprehensive processes. Is there sort of a light version that still give each employee enough of an understanding and a grip on the actual values for that to be meaningful, for that sort of matching as you were talking about?
Yeah, and to be honest though, it starts at the very beginning of somebody coming to work for an organization. It's the whole onboarding process. How are we actually recruiting? What are we asking in interviews to make sure there is value alignment there? What gaps do we identify within somebody's onboarding process? Maybe you want to hire them and there maybe are a couple of values that maybe not 100% aligned, but the other ones are so aligned that it makes sense. You can look and see where are those blind spots and how can we support that within their role. But that the onboarding process is huge. And then having the training. So not only were the questions they're asking to find the right match, but the training for them, for the employee and the new joiner, needs to understand the mission and the values and the behaviors that are assigned to that before they really even step in the front door. This should be part of that onboarding process. And if it isn't in place yet, that's something that could be a fantastic L&D project for the whole team to get on board with. And then from every new starter that comes next, they have a solid onboarding procedure.
Often you will have to start with saying, well, the whole team actually needs a bit of an upgrade, or at least we need to figure out whether or not they know what their own values are before we can make the exercise of connecting it with the company's new values, if they have sort of update. And then, you know, whenever we hire new people, obviously, as you say, making sure that they are a good fit for it. But I think that's probably easier, because if you have sort of are in that sort of transition phase and you at the leadership team develop these new kinds of goals and visions and missions and values and all that, then I guess that's more top of mind when you go out hiring. I think the harder part is probably say, well, what do we do with the 50 people or whatever number that is? We already have that value alignment backwards in your organization, so to speak. How do you deal with that?
You could do it in different ways. So you could literally have somebody external come in, or an L&D trainer or manager that already exists may already have the skill set already to be able to run sessions on personal value identification and then run workshops on how that integrates within the business. But it can be done really simply as well. Do it in team meetings. Start to understand, focus on one value, understand the personal values. And then from there, you can always have like a theme every month or every quarter. So we reconnect with this value and we reconnect in a way that's both personal and professional, and then move on to the next one and the next one. You can kind of drip feed it that way. Really, it depends where the organization is in terms of their size, in terms of their time available as well. But having some sessions that are mixed as well be very important. It's extremely powerful for, you know, C-suite to be involved in workshops, perhaps for lower hierarchical positions. Some can be really important to have that mix. And often what we see is companies that have tried to do this, C-suite will go on a training, and then the next layer down will go on a training, the next layer down will go on a training. And actually now there's still disconnect between top of the chain, bottom of the chain. And again, that's something that it's sometimes a simple thing that can be overlooked.
I like that sort of really practical approach, because again, in the classic SME, bringing in huge teams from outside and making workshops and individual programs and coaching and all that, that's just not how things are done, right? So that more practical approach, where it's kind of like, let's just take it up at a team meeting every month and dive in and connect to it, at least as a starting point. And then perhaps that will, you know, pave the way for a more in-depth version, perhaps with outside support as well. But that sort of first step needs to be really practical. And I think that's a really simple recipe you just provided there. So
I think it's definitely the future. Like, there's massive investment coming into the workplace well-being right at the moment. I mean, I think it was, UK, this was $40 billion was being spent on employee well-being. And that's forecast to grow to $70 billion by 2030. So there's a lot more resources that are being allocated to these kinds of things and bringing external providers. But like you said, having it in a team meeting, yes, great first step. But there needs to also be a little add-on there of, okay, we're going to touch on it in this monthly meeting, but every day for the next month, we're going to perhaps all do this one thing, or we're all going to do one thing in our own way to connect with this value, and you're going to share it in a WhatsApp group or something super simple. So just to make sure there is a behavior attached after the meeting is really, really essential. So I know it's very practical, but it's just something, again, that would just start to create those seeds and essence of lasting change.
Yeah. Your area in many ways resemble mine on sustainability, where a lot of CEOs are kind of like still at a point where they're dipping their toes in the water. You know, you don't start all in. So instead of jumping in the deep end of the pool and just saying, this is going to be magnificent, for most people, it kind of starts at the other end of the pool. And so tips and tricks like you just share here, I think it'd be really good to get this feeling that, oh, this is actually fantastic because, you know, see what happened to the team now just because of this. What more can we harvest out of increasing the well-being and the stress levels of the organization? This might be worth exploring a bit more, right?
Yeah. And it's also good not to jump all in, because often the companies, again, that we've seen do this, go all in, but on the wrong solution to match the problems they're actually facing. So like, give it, for example, and this has been
the ultimate irony.
This is exactly what we're seeing, though. I mean, we've seen a big, you know, trend over the last few years of the, you know, the rise of the wellbeing app, and we're giving loads more information to our employees, but the employees don't have time to access them. They don't know where to access them, how to access them. There's so much information. So the information overload is adding to the burnout, and it's just not creating a solution, right? So this comes back to that point that we've discussed previously about, are we being well-being centered or are we being well-being driven? If we're being driven, it's almost like there's something in the future we're aiming for. But if we're actually starting to adopt the things that matter now from the inside out, then now we're actually going to start creating that change. And I would rather somebody take 100 small steps than one massive one in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I mean, it's ending up, it's basically a lose-lose or lose-lose-lose. I don't even know how many loses you need to add to that. You know, that's so terrible. And again, because it's people's lives, right? And we don't have time to fool around do like that. We must do something smarter. I have another question I would like to pose to you, because there are lots of different ways where you can do things. I mean, tools basically in the toolbox to say, I want to increase performance of my team. And how effective do you see sort of this purpose or force for good business, you know, being such a company? Where would you sort of put that up on a scale compared to some of the other tools? How effective is it to increase well-being and satisfaction?
I really like this question. So it depends on the if the answer is always it depends, right? It really does depend on, first of all, if it's a genuine intention of the business to be a business for good. Like, what does that mean for the intention?
Let's assume that's the situation behind this question. Let's assume that's it. If you're serious about this.
I'm sure your listeners are, for sure. It plays a part. So there's been some interesting data that came out on a recent study, by the Fleming study, which showed that organizations who adopt some form of force for good work, whether that be volunteer, charity, social good, any kind of contribution towards the CSRs, it is having a positive impact on well-being on the individual. There's not enough data to show the exact kind of return of what that looks like on an organizational level in direct correlation. However, it's safe to say that if it's positively impacting the well-being of the individuals within an organization, they are healthier, they are happier, they're going to perform better, they're more productive, they're looking after themselves. You're going to get more of your employee when they are there as well. And that in itself will create, obviously, a high return when it comes to financial return, when it comes to what they're contributing to the projects, not having to pay premiums in health insurance claims, and replacing staff members because of stress as well. So there's definitely some data now coming out to start supporting that. But a lot of it comes back to this higher sense of belonging. And when we are being a force for good as individuals or within an organization, and we're all moving towards something and we're kind of all on the same team, that sense of belonging is better, mental health is better. When we belong, we care more about what it is we are actually doing as well. So that's probably the main thing, but that is only true for those who really embody it, rather than companies that just say they are, because that obviously has the opposite effect, because then an employee will come and work with the organization thinking, oh, this company is great, it's doing some really good work, But then if they're not embodying it at the core, they'll lose that trust with the employee straight away, which is can obviously be detrimental.
And that's really interesting. I fully recognize that picture. And I just haven't thought about it in this very, very clear way that you just articulated here, because it's kind of one of the side effects of greenwashing as well, right? It's your might. You go out and tell the world, I'm amazing, right? We do all of this. We are force for good. Right? And then some people who have that drive and really, you know, align with those values and those causes or purposes, they come join, and then you get that, you know, 180 degree different reaction where people, if they don't just turn around and leave, they will be, you know, really, really stressed out and disappointed.
We see in the younger generations, right? This is a lot more important to them. Most of them say they would rather be working in a place that is honest, somewhere they can trust, someone, a company that is being a force for good in some way, shape, or form, rather than a massive paycheck. So we've got to start paying attention to this and how authentic is an organization really being when it comes to this? Because if not, that sense of belonging isn't there, the impact isn't there either. And the company itself is the one that will end up suffering, because those individuals, they know their values, right? They know what they care about. So they're going to go and they'll find their place in the world or in the workplace, right? In an organization that is a good fit for them. So it's the company that ends up suffering when we ignore these kinds of things. And that's suffering from team cohesion, performance, from a financial loss. There's so many ways the company ends up losing.
How well established do you think is this understanding at a C-suite level?
It's a tricky answer because we see in the extremes, right? We've got some fantastic organizations who are living and breathing everything. Like, for me, they're the ideal people that we work with. You know, one of the things that we're very careful about, the kind of companies that we do work with, we it's important that they are embodying their CSR commitments. It is important that they do have a solid vision. They are looking after their team, or well-intentioned to look after their team, and open to change. And those companies do exist. However, the polar opposite still also exists, and we can't ignore that truth. But what we are seeing is a generational turn of the tides, and I think the future is definitely looking more promising. But I do think some of the C-suites are at a point where they're still maybe stuck in some of the old ways, which is okay and it makes sense, but it's just not going to drive the people or the business forward in the way that they want.
Have you got what it takes to make sustainability profitable? There's a simple way to find out, because I've made a quiz for you that you can take in just a couple of minutes, and that will give you a score and some guidance to what next steps could be for you to make it even more likely that you will make sustainability a profitable driver of your business. So it's free and it's simple to take. Just head over to greenprofit.scoreapp.com. Okay, so here's another $1 million question. Are you ready?
I love that you think I've got every answer to the $1 million question.
Obviously. That's why I invited you on this show. You just pointed to the two extremes, and I clearly recognize this picture. But I will also say that, you know, perhaps those are the 10% in each end. So the middle 80%, or whatever that number is, are somewhere in between. So let's just imagine you are like somewhere in the middle of that, leaning perhaps a bit towards perhaps it's time to do something. What would be, you know, one, two questions to reflect on that you could offer people, could sort of kickstart their journey in this, or make them think, ah, okay, I need to go deeper into this, or, you know.
I think there's a few different ways, and it all depends on who is the decision maker and where is almost the resistance or the uncertainty. If we can identify that, the questions would obviously shift. But from my experience, cost is usually a massive player in these discussions, right? Is it worth the investment? And there was some fantastic research done. So anybody's listening to this that might be needing to put forward a business case for their C-suites, or are a member of the C-suite that needs to get other people on board, showing this data can really, really help. So there was some great research done on the return of investment on well-being, and it showed, and this is research that was backed up by McKinsey, PwC, Bupa, so many, and this was like a study of 100 studies over 10 years. So this is the average, is that the return showed 364% of the return on investment. So
that will be good enough for most.
Exactly, right? Where else do you know that you can have that kind of investment and return on? But yeah, for a C-suite, often that you know is a part of the conversation. CFOs should be running to their COOs and CFOs and their CWOs and CSOs and shouting this from the rooftops as well, because it serves everybody.
Yeah, that sounds like an interesting study. If you could send me the link afterwards, I'll be sure to include it in the show notes. I think that might be interesting for people. But I was thinking, you know, as you say, cost is a factor, and I 100% agree. And it's probably at that state, it might be the defining one, because they're not on a personal level invested in it and believing it, and thereby not ready to take the chances that it might come out on the right side. So, I mean, you point to the study here, but one of the problems could be that, you know, you might invest from one account, but you will harvest it from several different, and we are not used to that sort of more complex business case. So it's kind of like, well, if I invest in this in training, what do I get back, right? So how do we wrap our heads around it in a better way?
I think a really good exercise would be for every department within an organization, all of the heads, to actually go and look through what poor well-being is costing them from a staff turnover perspective. Like, how much does it actually cost them to lose a manager, not just financially, but also in time, in effort, in training, in getting somebody new up to speed, the recruitment process. Often it can take a good 6 months to performance manage somebody out of a role, another 6 months to find someone, another 6 months to train them. So it's costing you potentially 18 months before you get somebody that is actually at that high performance place within an organization. And if every department could look at the different ways in which poor well-being is affecting them, again, they will perhaps start to see, okay, where can we plug some of these holes? All right, why is somebody leaving an on-performance management? What's happening there? Maybe they are overworking and they're burned out, so they're not operating at their best. Maybe it's not because they're not competent at their job, right? So, I mean, that's just one example, but sitting down and asking the question is the easy first step that they can do. How is poor well-being affecting my immediate team and the results of my projects and the impact that we're trying to make? And then we can start to zoom out, and perhaps those managers can kind of come together with senior leadership and really start to understand and go through how that's looking as an organization, so they can then see, okay, if we invest in this over here, we can see how that will possibly impact over there.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's a really, again, tangible, easy step. And my guess is that in a lot of companies, it will be kind of a mind-blowing answer that comes back, unfortunately.
It is, often it is. And a lot of people don't realize how much money they are leaking in an organization just by not asking these questions. And I think sometimes we're so quick to expand our projects and the business and where we want it to go, when actually perhaps our attention needs to be on enhancing what's already there and getting the best of what we have, before jumping in and investing crazy amounts of money on different things and this new idea over here, and this is the trendiest well-being thing to do over there, you know.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, so we established now that as a sustainable company, if you make this real and take it seriously, it will be a positive influence on the well-being and of the staff. And also, you said, as just a bit of a recap, that, you know, be aware that you might actually put even more heat on it because of the endless source of energy, basically, in having this pursuit of a higher purpose. So there's a bit of a caution tale there. Is there any sort of advice you can give to what to do if you are, again, an executive C-suite of a purpose-driven business, and you want to, you know, really harvest some of the value we've been talking about here of getting that, the good stress and the right balances and the well-being and the connectedness and all of this, apart from what we've been talking about, there's sort of some things you would send people away with here.
Understanding the state of the business and the employees' wellness, I think, is a good indicator of what's going on at a deeper level within the organization. So if we can simply just start asking the question to teams, how are you? and allow them the space to genuinely answer that question. And that usually is then possible to get an honest answer when leadership are sharing their true feelings and opinions about how they are feeling also, not in a way that is blaming or attached to business goals, but maybe a CEO that puts his hands up and says, hey, I'm struggling right now. Like, I'm working probably more than I should. I'm snapping at my family. You know, I'm feeling it right now. How are you? You know, that immediately gives them permission to then answer that question.
Vulnerability, yeah, opening up.
And then from there, we can then start to understand, okay, what's contributing to that? And now you can start to get in a deeper understanding of then where to perhaps focus attention. I'd say that's the easiest place to start. And that's probably the trickiest sometimes, particularly for C-suite leaders, because it is almost a bit of a drop of the ego as well to be able to do that. But that is the way forwards, you know, is the ability to be able to create spaces where we can actually have honest conversations so that we can start to make honest changes that are going to be impactful.
I think this is an amazing place to stop. We could definitely continue this conversation for quite some time, but I think this is a very nice and tangible, and even you say it might be the easiest, you also in that same sentence said it's probably also very hard. So,
yeah.
And for so many things in working with transitioning your company and turning it into a force for good, there are a lot of these dilemmas where sometimes the questions can be so simple right ahead of us, but really, really also personal level, harder to tackle. But we must be able to and dare to. So I like it there. Thank you so much for your time and all your inputs here. And then want to ask, you know, if people want to connect with you, how do they do that best? What's the best way to find? I mean, you mentioned already there is a podcast. So people want more. Where do they go?
Yeah, absolutely. So the podcast is called Thrive in the Workplace and Become a Force for Good. And it is specifically designed for leaders at varying levels within an organization to start to understand and perhaps get a view and different perspective on different elements of well-being and what can actually contribute to a solid well-being strategy as well. So there's lots of practical insights. There's a lot of studies that come into the mix. There's a lot of eye-opening things that come into the mix. I've guests on sometimes. And I'm like, wow, I did not know that. I need to know that. So that's kind of what the podcast is about. Alternatively, you can find me on LinkedIn under Charlotte Stebbing Mills or the website, which is thewellnesstheory.com.
Great. Well, for all of you listening here, I would clearly recommend checking out some of these resources and absolutely also connecting with Charlotte, because there is also some interesting stuff that you are sharing on your profiles. So definitely do that. To all of you, thank you for listening. And please remember to subscribe if you find this was interesting. And if you did, I would really love it if you could do me a favor and just reach out to one person you know that you think might find this episode relevant and just ping them and say, I think you should have a listen to this. Because then we could all help spreading this and help speed up the pace of making the world a better place.
Thank you for listening to Green Business with Impact. Get more insights on circular business by visiting bwimpact.com and following Jasper on LinkedIn. Send your comments, questions, and suggestions. We'd love to hear from you.